This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard and DR Kernaz. We are talking everything where the Eagles are concerned, and those Eagles, where they are flying high, soaring high, just outside the top four, only on goal difference, and it is a packed show this evening. We're going to be talking all about that, the international break, their game on the weekend against champions Man City, although Palace have good vibes when they play those Manchester teams. Jonathan Smith, ESPN's Manchester City correspondent, will be joining us later, and a very special guest will be joining us in just a short amount of time, former Palace player Emerson Boyce. If you do have any questions or you have any questions for the team, please let us know. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. We want to hear from you. This is your team, your voice. And as DR just tweets out, we are live now. So yeah, tune exactly. in. Yeah, you was a bit scared.
Yeah,
that
you're
I knew
looking
that.
At it like, what? You don't have to at all.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you see, I just know that. Yeah, I've got it right in front of me here. Yeah, technology. Yeah, I'm watching every move you make. This is literally, mate. So the eagle eye, yeah? The eagle on.
Oh, no, okay. There we go.
And I'm out of good puns already. This
nah,
is it.
Don't worry.
Let's talk about Palace then. It has been international break. Real football returns this weekend. That's what I like to say. But I made an argument earlier. I don't know whether you'll agree or disagree. I'll soon find out. Out of all the teams in the Premier League, if I'm a Crystal Palace fan right now, I'm the happiest this international break. Am I right or wrong, Nick?
Yeah, when you consider that we haven't been that good and we're sixth, it's all right, isn't it? There were kind of doomsayers who wanted us to kind of be a bit lower down in the league because they wanted to get rid of Roy. But no, I'm happy with where we are. The big thing is the next five games, which, you know, I think where we are at the end of that will give us a much better barometer of how we should be feeling. But yeah, we had the international break, so we were in that position for a week longer. I think that happened last time as well, didn't it? We were.
It's always nice. Because just on the flip side, before I bring you in, I was just talking to West Ham, and they said this international break's gone on forever for them, because obviously you beat them last game, but they just have to think about it, they have to wallow over it. And they said, you know, normally in football, every 2-3 days you play again, and the previous game's forgotten. They have to linger on this for a little while longer. You can linger on that victory and being up in the upper echelons of the Premier League.
Yeah, but it's kind of worrying because after the international break last time, we went on to face Tottenham.
Don't spoil it, DR.
Yeah, but you have to. It is kind of worrying. It's not all like nice and sunshine. It's like we've got Man City. We have to be real about this. The chances of us losing is very high against City, of course.
Why? You beat Man United.
Yeah, I know, but City's different.
You beat
type
City
of
last year.
Yeah, I know, but there's still chances. We're not favourites going into the game. They're favourites. But yeah, I mean, the international break is good because I actually like what. It sounds crazy, but I like watching international football as well. Not England. I watch Turkey. I feel like. I was having this debate yesterday.
Many a talking point from the Turkey game. We won't get into those
exactly.
as well.
But yeah, so I like the international break.
Yeah, I'm not mad on the international break. Just, you know, I love the club football. If it's an international tournament, brilliant. I love it, but I can't get up for the games. I just feel like it stops the rhythm, it stops the momentum. Yeah. And how do the players feel at the clubs? And obviously, some go away on international games, DR. And, you know, you want to see them play for their nations, for their countries. But from a Palace point of view, you don't want any player to get injured either, do you?
You don't, but in a way, it could work out in your favour, such as Christian Benteke. He actually went and scored a goal. And when I was watching the video, I was like, all right, where is he? He must be in the box. But he took a shot from outside the box and it went in. It's like when you're at Palace, you're in front of
free
goal.
Christian Benteke. Hashtag maybe, start the movement.
Is that, maybe now, maybe he's going to become a free man, and hopefully when he comes to Palace, he's just going to carry this on. But that goal could be massive. So international break, it could work in your favour, of course, such as Benteke scoring a goal. But then again, there's always that worry, what if Wilf got injured, what if another player got injured? Then that could be a massive low. But yeah, I feel like this international break, if you're looking at Palace players and how they're performed and what happened, it went quite well for us.
I don't want to say that Christian Benteke has been written off by Palace fans, but Nick, is that, could all it take, you know, a few goals on international duty sparking back to life? Is there a case, because I think I'm the only one harping on for it, but could we see him in full force for Palace ever again?
I tweeted that he was trolling us. I really thought that it was, it's just typical Palace. We can only hope, can't we?
Why
not? We can
not?
Only hope. You're talking about players getting injured. It was worth Wilf going away just to see that assist he did for Pepe against the...
Sublime.
It was Sublime against lots of Balassi and Zaha tweets after the game because they're besties, aren't they? But it was just incredible. It was, they were statuesque, the defenders, weren't they? And then Pepe had the thing to say it was a team goal.
Well, I don't know, but I didn't see the build-up to it. But yeah, brilliant skill from Zaha. I just wonder what's going to happen with Benteke. I don't think, oh, he scored a goal against San Marino, he should start straight away. I don't think that's the case. But then again, if let's see how he reacts in training. Of course, Roy Hodgson's going to be around him, and Roy Hodgson, he sees him around 3 to 4 times a week, and we see him only for 90 minutes. So he'll know best, but hopefully it gives him a bit of confidence because he's so low on confidence. And I've said it on the show before that I just don't see a way back for him. But I'm just doing ifs and but. What if this is the thing that turns him around? I don't want to get too carried away. It could happen. I mean,
interesting. He's getting a game, and you've got Batshuayi at Chelsea worried that he's not going to get a game for Belgium for getting game time. And there's talk about him going in January. I mean, I don't know whether Palace would ever have him back for
£22 million.
No, I don't even have to think about it. Yes, we would.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised when Nick Amdenan.
Exactly, because when he came into Palace at January, he just sailed in so fast, and he understood what was required from him, from Roy Hodgson, and he scored goals. That's all that matters. It's like one striker. I know Jordan Ayew is now scoring goals as well, but it's just one striker that just came in, settled very quickly, and was scoring goals, and that's all that matters. And he's not really getting the opportunity at Chelsea. So that's something that I think as Palace fans, we should keep an eye on. I'm not saying that it's likely to happen, but there is a chance there. I think he wants to play first team football, and he'll still stay in London, Premier League. And it seemed like he enjoyed his time at Palace. And also he had a good connection with the players and also the fans. So that's something to look out for.
He bought into the ethos really quickly. Yeah, but I wasn't really umming and ahhing. I'd bite your hands off for him with that. For that money, and I'd let them have Benteke as well, just to seal the deal.
Oh, hang on, he just scored in the week. Give the man a break, Nick.
Yeah, but so did Sorloth once.
Right, let's quickly talk about Benteke, because if there was ever a reason we're going to see him start scoring the goals again for Palace or back in the starting lineup, would we argue that it has to be this weekend? Because I know Roy's not just going to change his plans or his game plan after one international break, but we could see maybe that, you know, this is the time, the confidence could be there. Why not try it now this weekend?
Yeah.
Maybe not the best team to try against.
It sounds crazy, but I'm actually not looking for Benteke. If he scores a goal, that would be fantastic. But what I'm looking for him is to have a bit of confidence to actually shoot the ball. It sounds crazy, but we're talking about a striker who doesn't shoot the ball. And when he's even in the box, let alone when he's outside the box. That's why I was very surprised when I actually saw him take a shot and go in from outside the box. That's what I want. I just want little steps like that.
Maybe he's been told, though, hold up play all the time, bring other players to time.
Sometimes you just have to forget about tactics and take the shot, because those times, I think it was against Wolves at home, where he just took so many touches and is inside a 6-yard box. It's like, just take a shot. That's it. You don't need to do anything else. Take a shot. But he wasn't taking the shot. That's why I feel like it's nothing to do with tactics. I think at times we've talked about it, how Roy doesn't play to Benteke's strengths. But then again, when he does get opportunities, most recently, he's not finishing them, and he looks absolutely poor up front. So I feel like it's a combination of both. But what Benteke can do after this is that if he has got a bit of confidence back, Show it to the fans and show it to Roy Hodgson, because that's why he hasn't played. He came on last game against West Ham, but he's not really getting the opportunities that he was getting previously. And I feel like Roy's realised it.
That's because players are so lacking in confidence in him. They're not passing to him. When he does get the ball, he hasn't been very good at all. Last game, he was on for 3 minutes. He got booked for time wasting, I think.
And kicked the ball away.
It's hard to showcase what you can do in 3 minutes, isn't it?
The fans would be so... It would bring the atmosphere down if he was in the starting lineup.
But it's also very harsh on Jordan. I feel like it's very harsh on Jordan Ayew as well.
He's playing very well lately.
Yeah, he's playing very well, but where he's not going to get a break if Benteke doesn't go up to next standard, because it seems like Roy has lost faith in Benteke, and then there's no one else to play up front. And you saw Jordan Ayew towards the end of the West Ham game where he was very tired. Mm. And over the tour of the season, we've seen it with James McArthur last season and Andros Townsend. It could impact you as a player.
I want to see all the players looking tired at the end of the game. If they ain't looking tired, they ain't done enough.
No, at the end of the near towards the end of the season, you have to admit, what we didn't do last season, it seems like, is player management. Like, not enough player management. And you can see that some certain players, they just, from the start of the game, they weren't at it as they were in the start of the season. And I'm worried that that could happen with Jordan Ayew if we don't actually look after him.
Is that why Andros has been on the bench, do you think, then? Just to settle him down a bit?
I don't think so. I feel like Andros has been on the bench because since the start of the season, he hasn't been performing up to the standards that he has before, and he has deserved to drop. But then again, these last two games, his performance has gone up there once again. He got an assist against West Ham, scored against Norwich at home. So Andros is a different case scenario. But yeah, with other players, we need to make sure that we... But Luka Milivojevic, before the West Ham game, I think... How many? 62 games? Something. I'll get the figure out in a second, but 62
games... Yeah, come on,
games
DR, don't bring it to the table, then you don't know the full fact, mate.
Yeah, but I said... it's international football, I forgot about it. But I said on the review pod, yeah, he played for like 62 games without a single minute off, and that's nearly two whole seasons.
It can take it works its toll, obviously, in a long season. The Premier League is a long, tough season. I just want to quickly ask, whatever we feel about Benteke, whether he's starting or not, or other players are on international duty, when they do go away and they do well, it can only be a positive for Palace, because it's a selection headache for Roy. Now he's got this dilemma, you know. Well, he's not done great for us, but he's done well on international break. You know, it pushes players on. Now it can be an option to bring these players on, because let's see if it can work out now. Let's see if they've got that confidence back.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like this is a massive week for Benteke in terms of training as well. He needs to go to the training ground with the same mentality and show to Roy Hodgson, look, I have changed. I've got a bit of confidence now. You need to give me a chance against Manchester City. But now it's all on Benteke, because Roy Hodgson has given him chances over chances, and fans have got onto Roy Hodgson for that. Now it's Benteke. Go on, show me what you can do.
Show me what you can do. Strong words from DR. This has been a passionate 15 minutes. I've absolutely loved it. You two firing at each other. Let's do more than 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours with the Back of the Nest podcast. One player who will know about going off to international breaks, coming back, fitting in with the side. It is former Palace player Emerson Boyce. He will be joining us on the phone next.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard and DR Kernaz. What a fiery opening segment to the show, talking about the international break. We haven't even had a game and we still managed to debate everything where the Eagles are concerned. And you can debate with us too. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. Well, we're going to shut up for a second, because a man who knows a lot more than us, and we are delighted to have him join us now. It is former Palace player Emerson Boyce. Emerson, thank you so much for joining us tonight and giving us a little bit of your time. It's a real delight to have you on. Firstly, I hope you're well, and what have you made of Palace's season so far?
Good evening. Palace has done really well with this season. They started very good. Well, Hodgson, as everybody knows, is a decent manager, and he's got a good track record. So, you know, I think they're sixth on the table at the moment and have some really, really good results. And obviously, you know, a good result at United as well. So they started the season well. Hopefully they can maintain it. And fingers crossed they can just progress and have a great season.
Hi, Emerson. During your time at Wigan, you had the opportunity to play with James McArthur and James McCarthy. What was their relationship like at the time? Were they as close as they show out to be right now at Palace? Because as soon as McCarthy joined, McCarthy was saying how he welcomed him. What were both the relationships like?
Yeah, I think they both came from the same team when they came to Wigan, and they're both relatively young. And they fit in straight away. Obviously, they're close, they're good friends, both, you know, come from the same team. So, yeah, their relationship's always been there and been good. And, you know, McArthur obviously shown his quality already, you know, at Palace. You know, I've seen some of his performances and been very, very good. And McCarthy, you know, no doubt is a very good player. Didn't quite happen to him at couldn't quite happen to him with Everton, but I'm sure Crystal Palace fans will see how good he is when he finally gets into a form and injury free.
Yeah, you're right. It's a bit of a Palace reunion at Wigan, wasn't it? Because you had Victor Moses. Was he there at the same time as you, Victor?
Yeah, Vic was there. Yeah,
and Ben lifting the FA Cup. What was it like? Was it like being with the same player at a different club? Must be a bit weird.
Yeah, a little bit. They both were young when I was at Palace. Victor hadn't broken into the first team yet, and obviously Ben had just been breaking into the first team. So when they came to Wigan, it was obviously someone that I knew. Victor especially, I took him under my wings and try to help and guide him. But you know, he's a fantastic, both of them are fantastic people. And obviously Ben came along and scored the goal for us in the FA Cup final. And look at Victor, he's got on and played for Chelsea and represented his country. And you know, he's a fantastic talent. So both of them were a great addition to Wigan at the time. And they, obviously their careers have gone on.
Victor came to you when pretty much because Palace were about to go into administration, weren't they? I think Paul Hart had taken the reins with Dougie. Did he mention anything about what it was like at Palace playing under the administration, or was it all just kept quiet and not mentioned?
No, he didn't really mention too much about it. He just obviously he enjoyed his time there, and he just said, you know, obviously the atmosphere, you know, it was a bit hard at the time where obviously going through administration and stuff like that. But I think Wigan got a decent deal, you know, regarding getting Victor at the time. And all Victor wanted to do is play football. So he's not the sort of person that really talks and look at things that happen on the outside. He just wants to get a ball at his feet and play football. And, you know, it shows how good his talent is.
That's good. That's good. Any other players at Palace that kind of stick in your mind now that you look out for or you're still good mates with?
Yeah, the players a lot of them come to my era now. Most of them retiring now.
Yeah, yeah.
But Routledge is obviously still out. I think he's still out of Swansea. I think he's still doing all right down there. But yeah, a lot of the players now are more or less retired. So it's a case of a reunion. I looked at our game against United in a couple of years back, and you know, you realise some of the good players that we actually had at the time with the team. And you know, it's it was great times at Palace, and I enjoyed every single minute of it.
Glad to hear that. You beat Man City in a cup final. Nicely links to our game on Saturday. We've got Sacco, we've got Cahill at the back. We've also got Dan and Kelly and Tompkins. I don't think Sacco and Cahill could play together because I think they're too similar. Or one wants to be the boss, and so does the other one. What do you reckon about our defensive choices?
No, I think like most teams that play well against City, it's about the whole team. You know, people could say that Emerson Boyce against Aguero had no chance. You know what I mean? So you know what I mean? That's the reality of it all. But if the team do well, you know, as has shown in this season so far, you know, we're going to certain places and getting good results. That you know, as long as the team plays well and solid, then anything's possible. And it's probably the right time to play City at the moment, where they're having a bit of a up and down season so far. And you know, Palace are doing well. It's going to be a tough game, but I think they'll go into the game confident that they'll get a decent result. And you know, why not? They're playing well at the moment. City are playing up and down. So I think they can get a really, really good result.
We've got a manager, Roy Hodgson, and Pep going against each other, different philosophies. You was in the game for a very long time. How much during your time when you were playing has the game developed tactically, such as you see managers asking more tactical demands rather than just going out there with more of a free-throw football?
I think it's changed in terms of managers now are coming out and letting you express yourself. You know, Guardiola came in and no one thought his way of playing football will suit the Premier League. And he just blew that out of the water. Well, Roy Hodgson's more of a solid manager, I think, and he sets his team up to be hard to break down. Whether that's the old school way, but as long as it works, it doesn't make a difference, you know. But no, it's how the game's changed. It changed quite a lot for me when we had Steve Bruce, who was very much a solid person, everybody together, you know, be hard to beat. And Roberto Martinez came in, and he was very expansive and, you know, play openly, and it was a shock to the system, to be honest with you. But, you know, he proved to an extent his way of playing is the right way. And, you know, that's what the Premier League's doing at the moment. Everybody's trying to play the not, I wouldn't say the right way, I'd say more openly. But it's a result business. And Roy Hodgson's shown at the moment that his way is working. And I'm sure there's a lot of teams in the Premier League that are lower down that would happily swap places with him and play more defensively. But, you know, it's not always pretty on the eye, but as long as it gets the results, that's all that counts.
Yeah, Emerson, I couldn't agree more. It is a results-based business. Palace currently outside that top four, but only on goal difference. And it just brings me back to the start of the season where, you know, we was unsure what to make of the Eagles in the season coming ahead. You know, didn't really invest in the transfer market, sold Wan-Bissaka, worried where the goals were coming from, a shaky start, not conceding many, though, a very good defence, worrying about the goals. Now, though, some very, very good results with some mixed performances in the bag. Like I just said, outside that top four, what's the realistic aim this season, Emerson, and what can they achieve this season? What's the expectation?
I think if they look at their position now, I think they're sixth or something like that, around that sort of a mark on the table. Then, if they can get into that, if they can break into the top six, it'll be absolutely fantastic. I think, you know, look at the teams that are fighting for the Champions League spots, and you know, you look at a lot of the teams that are coming outside of it. I think if they can finish seventh. Even seven, six will be a great season. You know, I think Wolves done it last year where they finished half on the table, and obviously as long as you can get European football, you know, that would be some season they had. You know, going into the next season playing European football was it would be a dream for most players. So you know, I think Wolves is doing a really, really good job. He's got a good foundation there. I think the key was keeping Zaha. And I think they'll keep him for the January window. Next season, it might be a bit tough to keep him. But I think that was the biggest coup they've done this the last summer in terms of keeping him. And it shows his value to the team, and it gives everybody a lift. And they've got a good squad there, a lot of good players. And I'm sure they'll build on to come January in the next season.
Well, Emerson, it was a real delight to have you on. Thank you for giving us a little bit of your time. We really appreciate that. We know you're extremely busy. Emerson Boyce there, ex-Palace player, telling us an insight of the club and to the days he had and the players that he knew. Really insightful there. But the news never stops at Palace. We're going to carry on. We're going to look to that game on the weekend, and we're going to see if Palace can do the double over the Manchester sides.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast, Nick Gillard and DR Kern, as we were just talking to Emerson Boyce there. And what a delight that was, really, to talk about his time at the club and the memories that he has. We was also talking about the international break. Has it helped? Has it hindered? Well, Palace, they are sitting pretty just outside those top four places, but only on goal difference. They've got a tough game on the weekend, but they know how to get a result against those Manchester teams. Nick is laughing, but we want to hear from you because this is your team, your voice. So please tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 70 20 558. You can also WhatsApp on the same number. Just quickly, let's turn our attentions, because there wasn't a game on the weekend for Palace, but it was international break. We spoke about it earlier. DR, we want to hear about Turkey as well, because two important matches last night. But of course, before we talk about the football, before we talk about the matches, we have to talk about the horrible scenes in Bulgaria for the England national side. And obviously, Phil Alexander, Crystal Palace chief executive, he was at the Bulgaria game to saying disgusting scenes, DR.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching the Turkey game, so I wasn't able to watch the England game, but I went on Twitter and I saw what was going on, and afterwards I saw the videos, and I just find it absolutely disgusting that this has happened in 2019, and I feel like the pressure is really on UEFA now, because I don't even understand the free principle rule in the first place, because...
Protocol, absolutely embarrassing.
It's embarrassing, the fact that there has to be a PA announcement for the fans to stop. That shouldn't happen. This is not a normal situation. It really isn't. If there's a racism incident, the game should be stopped immediately, because I personally don't know how it feels, but I could just only imagine what Tyrone Mings was feeling that time, like whilst playing a game. You can see in his, there was actually
starting for
as well.
England. What should be a memorable night for him? You know, one he's going to talk about his family with.
It's horrendous, and this wouldn't. If UEFA just go and ban, do a stadium ban or whatever, that sends a wrong message. You can't do that. I mean, if we're talking about racism here, it's not a normal situation. And that's what I'm fearing the most. I feel like UEFA is going to go out there and they're going to give them fines and stadium bans. And
it's nothing.
That's nothing. And it sends a wrong message. And you're in a sticky situation right now where if the England players walked off, then I feel like more people around the world would be like, wow, like players walked off. But then again, you don't want to let the racist wins. So they stayed on, and credit to them, because it must have been a very, very hard situation for you to stay on and get abused like that. But I'm telling you now, I'll say it again, the pressure's on UEFA. If they do the wrong thing, then I feel like the FA here should take actions as well and say, look, enough is enough. We can't. The free protocol rule is nonsense, and a stronger action should be taken.
Nick?
It's a tough one. I think that the government should be doing something. They've got people openly Nazi saluting in the stadium. They've got their faces on telly.
Getting arrested.
Yeah, just get them arrested for doing it. It should be against the law. It's difficult because it's not all of the Bulgarian supporters. My next door neighbour's Bulgarian. He said we're rubbish. It'll be 7-0 to England. So he was only one out. But he came out and apologised to me this morning. He said that's not my country.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many of the fans it was in the stadium who did that, but you've got to remember the collective punishment. It's not good for everybody. You've got to get the people that are doing it, not the country.
And also, the young viewers that are watching, like, you know, we're meant to be showing the next generation coming through. And I couldn't agree with DR more on this 100%, because, like you said, whether it's Bulgaria, it's whoever, whatever nation, they need punishment, rightly so. It starts with UEFA, because it could be another nation next week. You know, what is this? Oh, they go through three stages, then we might do something about it. Like, three warnings. It's absolutely embarrassing from UEFA. And the facts of the matter is, I don't want fines. I don't want being told about it, or, you know, maybe deducting a point or a goal or whatever UEFA want to come up with until they're actually doing something about it. What I want is, no, we're not docking points, you're not taking part in the next qualification. I don't care if you've got hot talents coming through in your next prospects. This is how you've acted. You know, you really don't like the punishment. It's really simple. You don't do it.
And as disgusting as it might sound, there may be situations where, let's say England do walk off, that people encouragingly do rate, like people who were doing a racist chance, they managed to win because they know that England will walk off. So in other games, let's say England face another country and similar situation happens, people are going to know that there's a chance that England's going to walk off. And let's say that they do it, then they already think they're going to win. So I don't think this is a situation where it's just a matter of, let's just, as I said, the stadium and match, the stadium and the fines. I feel like that does nothing. And it's a bigger issue as well. It's not a simple issue of, let's just, you know, let's just throw Bulgaria out the whole competition. It's more of an education issue, and it relies on the countries itself. And I can only imagine your neighbour who came out, and can you imagine being in that situation where your country is being portrayed as this, and it's going to stick by them? It's so hard for everyone involved. It's just such disgusting scenes, and you can see that they came with the intention of doing that.
Yeah,
because they left before half time.
And another problem is the manager coming out going, "Oh, I didn't hear anything. I'm denying it." And I know today people said, "Oh, well, what's he meant to say? Because it's his country, and he don't want to go against them." But when we've got a problem where people, you're saying it, the 2019, when people are still denying that it happened, when it's on TV, we're watching it, we're hearing it, we can see it. I mean, we can't. How are you denying it? And even to the point where UEFA are going, well, maybe we'll get an announcement out. What do you mean we'll get an announcement out? What is going on here?
What would have been more powerful than anything else would be the Bulgarian team walking off.
But it's like with they'll never do it. I mean, you're completely right, but they'll never do it.
Exactly.
They'll never do it.
They'll never do it.
So maybe
this is where DR said they need to be talked about, because they need to lose something. Because what is the punishments? And the fans don't care. If the team loses, it's not them that loses. It's never them, is it?
Maybe the kicking them out of the competition will force the whatever country it is to do something about it.
Well, it's horrible scenes last night in the international break, but we could talk about this obviously a lot more, but we are here to talk about the Eagles. We're going to talk a little bit about transfer news and a little about who could be coming on the way, because we want to see some activity in January.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show. What an enjoyable show tonight. Fiery on all the subjects. And we haven't even had a Palace game. I've really enjoyed myself tonight. And I hope you have. And you can still join in with this evening's show. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio or call us on 0208 7020 558. We are in the studio talking everything where the Eagles are concerned. I'm joined by the back of the Nest podcast, DR Kernaz and Nick Gillard. Well, DR, you are the man in the know, because he's looking at me, he's worried. It's not January, it's October, but we're already Nick's laughing, he don't want to do it. We're going to do a little bit of gossip, we're going to do a little bit of speculation. We don't even know if Palace will spend in January, but there's a few names that are already being rumoured, aren't there?
Yeah, one of them is Ozan.
So I put him on the spot, he knew this was coming.
Yeah, one of them is Ozan Tufan. It's not coming from me, it's coming from other sources.
This.
No, but it's not. I'm not the one putting the news stories out there. So Ozan Tufan, we're linked with him in January, I believe. He plays for Fenerbahce. In his position, they say that he's a midfielder, but he can actually play right back as well. And this season, I've pretty much watched every game that he's played in. And
what have you made of him so far, Dio?
Look, before when we were linked with him around January time, he actually had issues off the pitch, and I was not encouraged by that. Fenerbahce were not playing him because of, I think, his diet and his weight issues, so there were issues. But now he has come back this season and he has sorted everything out, and at certain games he has looked like the man that changes everything. I mean, he's only played right back, but he's got the strength, he's committed, and I feel like now I would accept him on our team after what I've seen so far this season. I wouldn't accept him as a midfielder, because yesterday for Turkey, even he was playing central midfield, and I don't think he's got the technical abilities, especially in the Premier League, to control the midfield as our other midfielders do. But I mean, as a right back for Joe, to compete with Joe Ward, I think it makes I think it will make sense. And also, in terms of how much we'll have to pay for him, I don't think he'll be in the 20 millions. I feel like Fenerbahce will probably accept something for 10 to 15 million, and nowadays, that's what realistically, that's a good price.
So we sign him in January, and with Roy's record...
Nick, you getting in on the transfer gossip?
He's laughing, now he's here.
I just had a thought that every player that Roy signs, we don't see him in the team for 7 months.
Well, it depends. If Roy likes him, you do, with Gary Cahill and McCarthy. Yeah. So I don't know if Roy really knows about Tufan, I'll be honest. I doubt he does. But, I mean, it's if, of course, you have to, the manager and Doug Friedman will probably speak, and Steve Parrish, but we need to make a right back signing. We can't go full season on with Joe Wood. I mean, that is a very, even us going with Joe Wood at this stage is very risky, but to go the full season, you're just playing with fire. So,
well, you've got Kelly that can cover, you've got Schlupp who can cover for PVA.
There's no one for, I don't see Kelly as a cover for right back, to be fair.
The goals are more important. At the moment, we're not letting any goals in. We're doing really well. It's the fact we're not putting goals
That's if we, well, but when injuries creep in.
Well, actually, I want to talk about that. Let's tread off the beaten path ever so quickly, because Nick, you like that. I know you're a teacher. Thank you. You've been working on it. Let's quickly talk about Gary Cahill. And I want to talk about him because I feel like, I'm not sure this is the right word, Nick. You can correct me on this. But I feel like towards Cahill this season, before someone came in for him, there was a little bit of snobbery towards him. Like, he's got a little bit old. He wasn't at the level he was. And maybe this is overboard, but I feel like he's been an absolute revelation for Palace this season.
I am eating my words, because I said exactly those things that you've just said. And I think he's been a signing in the last 3 or 4 years. He's made that much of an impression on me. He seemed to slot into the captaincy against West Ham. It just seemed natural that he would be the one to take the armband. And again, he gets the club. He loves his football. He knows that he's in the twilight of his career, and he wants to give his best. And he wants everybody around him to give their best as well. He won't have it if they don't.
I was in a similar boat with you. When we signed him, it's a 2-year contract, and you look at his age, and I was just like, oh, we're...
You were fearing the worst,
weren't you? Exactly, and plus we're tight on budget, so I was like, was this really the right choice? But, I mean, he's proved me wrong as well. he's the alpha. I see him ahead of Saka, because even when he played next to Saka, he was a more vocal player. I was watching them two in particular. He was a more vocal player. And I feel like the captaincy at West Ham, he just, as Nick said, it was just natural. He's just a natural leader, and he's been such a massive signing for us. And I was actually thinking about it. I was talking to an Arsenal fan. I was like, he could have done a job at Arsenal, because in terms of playing out
100%.
In terms of playing out from the back, I actually didn't know Cahill was this good. He can actually play out
from
the back.
Well, they signed David Luiz. I mean, you would argue that Cahill's been better. You know, David Luiz is younger and they say he's a better passer of the ball, but come from the same club. It's a good argument. And these words get used very, very quickly. Like, he's been fantastic, he's been brilliant. But I want to say that Cahill, I know it's a small sample size, but he has been very, very good, if not brilliant so far, hasn't he?
Completely. You talk about passing at the back. Arsenal can't seem to manage that, can they?
Well, that's another show. That's
I know, but I mean, it's weird that, you know,
we've only got like 20 minutes left, Nick.
Everybody's doing it. Arsenal can't do it. A little bit of pressure. They're worried. I think that's what we need to do at City on Saturday, innit? Were they playing out expansively from the back?
We have to be smart with it. You don't want to open up too much space against City, but yeah, we'll talk about that in a second.
We're going to talk about it in a second. It brings us on perfectly to it, because you're saying that you have to be careful against City, play out from the back. Although City, they've tasted a few defeats this season. They're not at their, you know, their rampaging best. Can the Eagles get a result on the weekend? To tell us more, Jonathan Smith from ESPN will be joining us.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
That's right. It's time for the opposition view on Love Sport Radio. You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show with me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm joined in the studio with the Back of the Nest podcast. Nick Gillard and DR Kernas joining me to talk everything where the Eagles are concerned. And someone else joining us now, I'm delighted to say as well, Jonathan Smith, the Man City goal correspondent. Jonathan, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time. It's a real pleasure to speak to you once again. It's a huge game on the weekend. Any game coming back from the international break is big. But, you know, Palace on a high, beating West Ham, just outside of the top four on goal difference. City coming off that defeat at home to Wolves. This is a fairly bigger one than people may think, Jonathan.
Yeah, this is a game that City could really do without. Like you say, obviously, you know, Palace are in good form, and City just haven't been at it this season. For whatever reason, obviously, two brilliant seasons. I don't know, it's a bit of a hangover from that, and they've just not been quite at it in the first few games of the season. And we saw last season, Palace have got the players to cause them problems. So, yeah, coming after the international break, coming out on the back of that Wolves game, this is a really tricky fixture for them.
With City, it seems like they have injury problems at the back with Laporte out, and of course Vincent Kompany's gone. Do you think that Palace could take advantage of that?
Yeah, I mean, Laporte is the big loss. You know, I think Virgil van Dijk rightly gets all the headlines. He's been brilliant since he went to Liverpool. And Laporte's sort of gone under the radar. His impact in City, he's a real leader in the back four. He's out until, well, January the earliest. So he's a big loss. John Stones should be back for the weekend. He's back in training, so he's got a chance of playing. But you know, like you say, without Kompany, without Laporte, the defence has really struggled this season. So I looking at Palace's forward line, I mean, I always thought Zaha is just an absolutely fantastic player. I haven't seen a lot of Palace this season, but from what I understand, Jordan Ayew is getting rave reviews, which I found slightly surprising. But if he's on his game, he can cause Otamendi problems, he can cause John Stones problems. So, you know, the City's defence is there to be got at, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Ayew surprised us all, to be fair. I don't think anyone expected Jordan Ayew to be this good, even Palace fans, when we bought him. Many people were saying, why do we actually go ahead and buy him after his loan with Swansea? But, I mean, the last time, not last game, but of course, there was a game against Norwich where City went on to lose, I think it was 3-2. And then afterwards, the following Premier League game, they beat Watford 8-0. Do you feel like, in a way, that this could go against Palace? Because we saw what happened last time when City went out for revenge. This time around, they lost against Wolves 2-0 before the international break.
Watford are rubbish.
Yeah, but Wolves
are really rubbish.
Yeah, but 8-0 still.
Yeah, but they're really rubbish.
It's 8-0. It's 8-0. But do you think that could happen? A similar situation could happen? Not 8-0, but City could come out blazing.
Yeah, I won't be putting any money on 8-0 just yet. But,
yeah.
I mean, City can punish really good teams if they're not on it. I mean, the one thing I would say about Norwich is they were very brave in the way they played. They were comfortable on the ball. They were playing out at the back, and they took the game to City. Now, the last couple of times I've seen Palace against City, it's been more of a counter-attacking game, and they've tried to suck up the pressure last time at Selhurst Park. I think if they do that again, that might just play into City's hands. They need to go and attack City because they're vulnerable at the moment. Their confidence isn't high. If they go for it, if they really put City under pressure, that's the best way of getting something out of this. They can't go into the game thinking about City stinging from that defeat to Wolves. They've got to think City are there for taking.
Pep Guardiola, is he up for bringing a team out of the doldrums? Because by City standards, it's pretty bad, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's against very, very high standards. I mean, the last two seasons are just remarkable, aren't they? 198 points in two seasons. They've had setbacks in the past. Obviously, 12 months ago, there was back-to-back defeats against Palace and against Leicester, and it was looking like Liverpool were taking control of the title race. It's not been a great season, but they're still the second best team in the country, and they're only behind Liverpool. They've won every single game. So I think Guardiola keeps saying it's very early days, and that's right. They've got Liverpool to play twice. When they're to game, it's only 2 points, and Liverpool are going to have their time in the season when they struggle. So he's certainly more than comfortable at overturning that deficit. When they start getting players back, obviously De Bruyne has got a shout of being in the game on Saturday. He missed the Wolves game. Started the season absolutely fantastic. I think he's averaging an assist every game. So he's been missing, obviously, in the year. So when you get into January, it's going to be a very, very strong team again. And they'll be ready to go for it again.
Do you think there's, of course, Pep's going to be positive early on, and it is early on in the season, but do you think around City fans there is the genuine concern that this season they could actually lose the title to Liverpool? I think it's 8 points now that City are behind Liverpool, and it's just the whole atmosphere does feel different between the two camps.
Yeah, I mean Liverpool are a fantastic team, no doubt about it, and the thing is they can't allow that gap to get any greater, because Liverpool haven't won the title for 30 years. They've been in two title races against City in 2014, last season, when it went very close. Both title races went to the final day of the season. And there is that thing about Liverpool that until they actually win that title, the pressure is so great at Anfield. City have got to keep that pressure up. There's no doubt about the quality of Liverpool. They are good enough to win the league. I mean, they won the Champions League last year. They've just got great quality throughout the team.
Well, Jonathan, we have to put you on the spot. What is your score prediction for the weekend?
It's a really tough one to predict. I mean, if City had it, it could be 3-0 away win. So I think Pep will get a response, so I'm going to go for that, 3-0.
3-0, Jonathan. You've not made any friends in the studio, but as always, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. Jonathan Smith there, the Man City goal correspondent, excuse me. He said 3-0. He said they're going to bounce right back. Pep will want an answer. He's going to get one on the weekend. Palace are at home. They're not conceding many goals. It's been a brilliant start to the season. I know City, when they're playing, they're an absolute force. 3-0, though, does feel strong. Although, listen, one of the best teams in Europe, and if not the world, on their day, they can pull anyone apart. I don't know, though. Palace are going to be up for it. Nick, what are you saying? Firstly, before we do predictions, how do you think the game will play out? And how do you think Roy will sit up? And where can the Eagles hurt Man City?
Well, if De Bruyne is playing, you're going to need somebody on him. I was going to ask DR, would he bring Milivojevic straight back in, or do you stay with the starting lineup that did so well against West Ham?
I think Luke is coming back in. I just think even the stat about how he's hardly had any time off before this suspension. I just think he'll come in for McCarthy and we'll just go on from there. I don't see Roy really making that many changes. But in terms of this game, I think the key is just remaining. Even the West Ham game, what I said was just, it sounds so simple, but remaining focused for the whole 9 minutes, because when you switch off for 5 minutes, for example, City's got that quality to punish you. And last season, when we were playing West Ham, that did happen. But of course, against City, when we were away from home, we managed to get a result. But if you look at that game in particular, everyone played a role. Every single one of them. It's coming from Max Meyer to Wan-Bissaka, which we don't have anymore. But every single player on the pitch played a role. And that's what if we were to get a result, that's what we need to do for a whole 90 minutes.
So you're saying if we can't have any lapses of concentration, that you'd be bringing Townsend in for Schlupp? Because Schlupp's been doing well, but he has moments where he disappears in games. With a team like Man City, I don't think we can afford to have him in there not concentrating.
I think that's a bit... I feel like Schlupp, yeah, he does have bad games, but so does Van Aanholt and so does other players as well. I mean, Wilf didn't start the season off perfectly. I think he'll still remain by Schlupp because he's got the pace for the counter-attack, and also Townsend, it's been working so far, him coming off the bench. Of course, Andros would want to start because he feels like he deserved it now after the two performances, yeah. But I think he'll stick with Schlupp and he'll just try hurt them with a pace on a counter-attack. And it's also a good option to have Andros Townsend coming off the bench, let's say after 60 to 75 minutes, I'm punishing the City defence, especially if it's 0-0, because City, as the game goes on, they'll tie a one, and second of all, they'll open up a bit more because they'll try to push for it. So if we keep Andros Townsend on the bench and bring him on after, it'll make sense. And also, another final thing is that Andros needs to, I mean, two games he has been good, but I feel like another two games or another three games of him being good, then he could start, because you don't want to push him to the starting lineup too quickly.
Oh, it makes for an enticing game on the weekend, Nick. You know the questions coming. Obviously, Jonathan said 3-0. Jonathan Smith, the Man City goal correspondent. I'm pretty confident you're not going to say 3-0 to City, or you might. What are your score prediction?
I'm going to go for 2. If we have the sit back and try and hold them, we're going to lose 3 or 4-0. If we actually try and take the game to them a little bit, I think we'll win 2-1.
You don't want the way that Palace started against Spurs, obviously. That could be the danger. Hey. This is where the danger is. Like DR said, you need to hold out 0-0, then Palace can get themselves into the game, get a foot in that game. So, DR, what will your score prediction be?
I think I'm going to go with 2-0 City.
I really, really thought you were just about to say 2-0 Palace. I would have absolutely loved
what's
it.
What's going on?
Well, 2-0 and 3-0, and obviously 3-0 for Jonathan, clean sweep for City, but Palace are at home. I don't know. There could be a different day. It would be exciting. Anyways, 5:30, the game is on TV. But this has been the Crystal Palace Fan Show with a Back of the Nest podcast. I was joined by Nick Gillard and DR Kernaz. Next week, join us at the same time every Tuesday, 8 till 9. We'll be reviewing the game on the weekend and talking everything where the Eagles are concerned. Eagles!
Eagles!
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.